Hello and welcome to the University of Reading's Study Abroad podcast. My name is Henry. I'm the Study Abroad Officer for Outgoing Students. And today I am very excited to be joined by Bonnie, one of our Study Abroad alumni. Bonnie, are you able to introduce yourself and tell us where you studied abroad, please?
Yes, I am. Hi, I'm Bonnie. I am 24 and I studied from January 23 to May 23 at the University of Reading Malaysia campus in Johor, which is the southernmost state of mainland Malaysia.
Brilliant. Thank you, Bonnie. And I just want to take you back to pre-application, so before you applied, why did you initially want to study abroad?
Well, I had just returned to university after taking a break from studying due to the pandemic, and I really wanted to push myself. I really wanted to get the most out of my experience. And it was, I think I picked up a leaflet, actually. It was presented to me, this idea that I could study abroad. And I thought, well, why on earth not? This is a, you know, once in a lifetime thing. I'm probably not going to get this opportunity elsewhere. I'd previously been at a different university briefly, and they didn't have anywhere near the amount of connections that Reading had. So I looked around a bunch of different countries, but I couldn't really seem to find a place that sort of suited me. And so I spoke to one of your colleagues in the study abroad department on a call like we're doing now, and she said, "What about Malaysia? That we have a campus there, did you know?" And I said, "Oh, okay, I don't really know anything about Malaysia, but boy was I in for an adventure."
Yeah, excellent. And I'll ask, what sort of attracted you to the University of Reading Malaysia? Obviously, there's the fact that it's a branch campus, is something that we always promote to our students, our potential prospective study abroad students, is that mobility and that transfer is quite easy to make that adjustment to study abroad.
Yeah, well, what attracted me was that I think it was completely different from anything I'd ever done before. So in terms of holidays and such, I've been, I'd say, quite lucky compared to other people. I've gone to a few European countries and I visited the United States a couple of times, but I had never been to Asia, and I'd certainly never been anywhere on my own abroad. And so I really wanted to challenge myself, and I thought, well, what better way than going somewhere completely different? But there's also a sense of familiarity. There's a branch campus, and I was told that a lot of people there do speak English, and, you know, very, very good English. And I thought, well, okay, you know, I'm not going to be throwing myself in a perhaps unwise deep end, but I'm giving myself a challenge at somewhere very, very different to anywhere I've been before. So yeah, that's what attracted me.
Absolutely, yeah. So you get the opportunity to experience somewhere that's really culturally very different to the UK, but you still have access to that same support that you would have at the University of Reading. And it sounds like perhaps you didn't have much knowledge of Malaysia beforehand. Is that accurate, would you say?
Yes, that is accurate. The sum total of what I knew about Malaysia before I went there was it's hot and there is jungle. And both those pieces of information I got from a children's book series that I'd read at school, where essentially the premise is that there are some teenagers who are being trained as British intelligence agents, and for their final basic training assignment, they're dropped into the Malaysian jungle and they have to survive. And so that was the only thing I'd ever heard about Malaysia. It's hot and there is jungle. And so that stuck in my head, and I was like, okay, hot and jungle and they speak English. Okay, right. And then I just sort of went with that. It sounds quite, might sound a bit hard to believe, but I just went with those three things and just thought, okay, let's get on the plane.
Yeah, you're really sort of delving into the unknown. So that sense of adventure is really there, and you have to be brave to make that initial step,
oh,
don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say that it was far scarier getting there and the build-up to leaving than actually being there.
Yes.
Once I was there and I adjusted, it was God, I mean, it's pretty plain sailing. I thrived.
Good, excellent. And something that we always encourage students to do. So historically, our applications for study abroad have opened in January each year. So there's a bit of time between the start of semester and your application. And during that period, we really encourage students to do a lot of research about possible destinations, because that can really help them complete the application. And then that pre-departure stage, it can really help them prepare for their study abroad mobility. So can you remember back? How did you prepare for study abroad? What research did you do in advance of your mobility?
I researched the climate, I researched the accommodation I'd be staying in, and also the kinds of foods that they have there and where things are, you know, where the I looked up where the supermarkets were in relation to where I'd be staying, and also sort of local customs. Those are important to be aware of, particularly if you're going somewhere that is perhaps a bit further away, is perhaps not very similar to the UK in terms of culture. That's important to be aware of. So I looked up bits like that, but it all moved very quickly. So
Yes.
I think it did feel like, I mean, I'm sure I did quite a bit of research, but it did feel like one minute I'm just talking about it, the next
You
I'm
came
getting
around.
my visa, and they're like, okay, well, get your flight sorted. It did seem to all move very quickly.
And researching things like visa, that can make that transition much smoother, because obviously it's a big adjustment moving to a different country. So any research that you can do in advance, I think that really helps you transition and adjust to your new country a bit easier. Can you remember, were there any difficulties during pre-departure?
Normally people don't need a visa to visit Malaysia if you're British, but
Right.
in my case I needed the student visa, so I needed a specific photograph. A standard UK passport photograph, it wouldn't be sufficient. They needed specific dimensions and everything, so there was quite a bit of logistics in making sure everything was just right, because I didn't realize that countries varied so much on the documentation that you needed. I thought that they were kind of all similar, you know, passport style photo, but there are different kinds of passport style
Yes.
photo.
Can be rather complex, can't it? But it's important, that you do research. And I believe that, colleagues at the University of Malaysia, they help you through that process in applying for the visa. Which brings me to my next question. If you can remember, were there any difficulties during pre-departure or challenges, and how did you overcome them?
I think nerves. I was quite nervous. I was nervous about would I like it there after flying such a long way? I was nervous about the medical screening that is part of the process in Malaysia that foreign students have to do. I was nervous about being homesick, which, as I turned out, was nothing to worry about. And yeah, I was basically nervous about whether I'd survive.
Yeah, definitely. And I think
So
that
very nervous, but as I said, getting there was the most nerve-wracking part. That was the scariest part. Once I was there, it was all pretty plain sailing. I'd say after like the first 48 hours, I just sort of went, oh, okay. Oh, I like this, you know.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of anticipation building up to your departure, isn't there? And there's sort of an adjustment period, I think, when you move abroad, where you have to sort of persevere on those first few days while you adjust, get over jet lag and things like that. I'm going to take you back. Can you remember your day of arrival? So arriving in Malaysia, what was that like?
Yes, the first thing I remember thinking was, it's really hot, like really hot. And because I'd just gone from January in the UK, which, as we all know, is miserable. And I do not like it. And after living in Malaysia for 7 months, I like it even less. So, yeah, I got off the plane. I was met by Maha. I'm sorry I
Yes.
forget his full name, but Maha, who is, I believe, an international liaison at Reading, Malaysia.
He still is, yeah.
Yeah, and he's really friendly. And I'd had a long flight, and two long flights actually, because I'd had to change it in Qatar.
Right.
But honestly, yeah, it was it I felt okay. It was strange. But in a sense, it I think the things small things like a lot of the signage around me was in English, and they were driving on the left-hand side of the road like we do here. It made it feel not as odd, not as alien to me.
Some familiarities, yeah.
Yeah, and it was very, strange things like that that you wouldn't necessarily envisage. But yeah, things like that just sort of, even though I don't drive, right? I don't drive, but obviously most people have been in cars. But yeah, it was interesting. And I remember it was there was a storm when I arrived, and yeah, so I got a nice spectacle on arrival of driving down motorway on a stormy night. It was my first introduction to tropical rain as well.
Very atmospheric,
Yeah, very atmospheric, yeah.
yeah. And did you said you mentioned that you met Mr. Maha? Did he escort you to campus? So he met you at the airport, did he? And
Yeah, he met me at the airport, and he took me to my accommodation, and yeah, sort of checked me in there, and I sort of entered my room and just thought, oh gosh, it all hit me. And to
yeah.
be honest, stuff that was like the beginning of, I'd say, a brief period of it being quite hard, because I will be honest, I thought, what on earth have I done? I'm the other side of the world, and sorry. Yeah, I this place is completely unfamiliar to me, and I just I mean, I kind of freaked out, but in hindsight, this was the jet lag. I would say to people, do not underestimate the power of jet lag. It messes with your head.
Yes.
And so I was a mess, right, for the first 24 or 48 hours. I was, and perhaps people listening who saw me back then will be able to remember. Yeah, I was a little bit of a mess, and I was like, why am I here? Why did I choose to do this? What on earth is going on? But fortunately, people back home were very well. They helped me sort of weather that, the sort of the inner storm, the sort of my jet lagged brain going, what on earth's going on? And they just said, look, just take care of yourself. If you really hate it, you can leave, but just take care of yourself for now, and just sort of chill. And I was like,
Yeah. Yeah.
okay. And then, yeah, gradually my brain sort of righted itself, and lo and behold, it was absolutely fine.
Good. Yeah, I think that's quite natural feelings, isn't it? You know, that sort of first few moments, that's when doubt can creep in and you do
Yeah.
question, what have I done? But
And
to persevere and
I think no one told me about the jet lag. That was the thing. I sort of, I'd had my only previous experience with jet lag had been going backwards a little bit in I think New York, and I remembered sort of feeling a bit like a zombie and just sort of walking around and eating a burger. So I was like, okay, that's what jet lag is. That's fine. You just feel a bit sort of zombie-ish. But no, yeah, it can really mess with your head, and it can really make you think, it can really make you doubt yourself and think, why did I do this? I'm not enjoying this, etc., etc. But actually, it does clear, and that's just your mind being very, very, changed in the sense of where
Disrupted,
you've gone.
yeah.
And yeah, it does clear up. So yeah, that's a slightly scary thing, but it's temporary.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of tips for getting over that? Like how to sort of adjust to another country and how to tackle some of those feelings of, anxiety and doubt in those first stages?
Well, in my case, I had a great support system. I had my mum back home, and I had friends, so I was texting them and talking to them, and I think they all knew I'd be fine. I just needed a moment, and Yeah, so I'd say just really take it easy, really look after yourself, don't beat yourself up, don't go, why am I feeling like this? I've come all this way, I've spent all this money, etc., etc. Just don't think about that. Just take care of yourself,
By
and
day.
you'll probably find that within 48 hours it will have blown over.
Yeah, don't panic. Just try and remain calm and move forward, definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah, so moving on to the academic side now. Can you remember what were your classes like and how did it compare to classes in Reading?
Well, they're a lot smaller, which I think people would say is obvious because there are fewer students and it's a smaller campus. But it is very interesting how, the big lectures with 100 or 200 students in the UK that we're accustomed to, they didn't really happen at Reading, Malaysia. Maybe they do at the bigger public universities in Malaysia. Maybe they do, but not here. And that was quite interesting, but it was still lecture content. And I quite liked that, the idea of being in a more social setting, but still having lectures. And that sort of appeals to me. That's the way I sort of prefer to take in information. So it was a nice compromise. The class, the teachers, the lecturers, and the people in the classes were wonderfully welcoming. I was in my first day. I was who is it? Dr. Shu, if she's still there. Dr. Shu. She said, "As you know, we have a new friend." And I went, "Oh, you know,
Oh.
oh shucks," but that was lovely. And and I was really in that class. I was the only Western person there. The only person from the UK. So I felt comfortable quickly, even though I stuck out so much.
Yeah. And were there any sort of modules or classes you mentioned, Dr. Xu, that you, any classes or modules that you particularly enjoyed while studying in Malaysia?
I'd say the cognitive and biological psychology was the most interesting one because I like to learn things that are applicable to the real world, things that information that's interesting, and cognitive and behavioral psychology is very much it's cognitive and biological, I should say. It's very much about things that are applicable in the real world and stuff that's interesting and how things work and how different states of mind work. And to me, that's what drew me to psychology as a discipline. So yeah, I'd say that was my favourite thing, and that the classes were always very lively and very interesting.
Good. Yeah, and how interesting that you got to study it in Malaysia as well. Can you tell us anything that you learned about Malaysian culture? Were there any obvious cultural differences from the UK?
I think, in short, the UK could learn a lot from Malaysian culture. It's a lot warmer, not just in the sense of temperature, but in the sense of culture. People are more caring. They look out for each other more. It's a very multicultural society. But what is stressed in Malaysia is rather than being separate because of how people are different, they stress helping and being together because everyone is a human being. And there are public holidays all the time, seemingly, in Malaysia, because every religion's public holiday, every religion that's a major religion in Malaysia, every religion's public holiday is celebrated. So it's not, I'm this religion and this is my festival and you're that religion, so you have that festival. Every festival is for everyone. And everyone celebrates together. And I think that's very interesting, and I think that I found that really nice, and I think there is something there that we could that we and people in the West could definitely learn in terms of things not being so divided and so polarized.
Yeah.
A lot of yeah, there's people are very friendly, Again, even though I stuck out, and I've stuck out in Malaysia probably more than I've stuck out anywhere in my life. Being very obviously English and white, but in it, after a while, bizarrely, I felt really comfortable, and I almost, I kind of started to feel like one of them, and I'd say that's, that's testament to, as they put it, the Malaysian hospitality that they're famous for. Or maybe, I mean, I'm not sure how much that is them and how much of it's just sort of me as a person and the things that I prefer in, in a society. But yeah, it was the culture is very caring, very in favour of being harmonious, and also very colourful, very diverse.
That's
That
wonderful, yeah.
that's something that's appreciated.
Yeah. And I think it's incredibly eye-opening to sort of move to a country like Malaysia and to be a minority, and
Yes.
you become much more sympathetic of people with differences when you return to the UK, I think. So
Absolutely, yeah.
great experience. How about, I was asked this for all the students, what about Malaysian foods? Were there any, I love food when you're traveling abroad, so were there any foods that were yummy and delicious and
Well, the one that comes to mind for me first is actually a drink, Teh Tarik. It's a milky, frothy tea. And it's said that it was invented when a servant was trying to entertain a sultan by pouring tea into a glass from a high height, and the height at which he poured it caused this frothing effect. And the sultan thought, oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, they say it's a Malaysian drink, but also it's also claimed by Indonesia and Singapore, so it's sort of a that region in general. But yeah, it's a very Malaysian
you'd recommend
tea. It's very
it.
Malaysian tea, and yeah, I did enjoy it. And yeah, so that's Teh Tarik. And I think if you're a foodie, Malaysia's great in general because you can get pretty much every food you could think of. There's lots of Arab cuisine, Chinese cuisine, Indian cuisine, and of course a lot of European stuff as well because of globalization. And I was surprised as well how many chains and food brands that we're accustomed to are in Malaysia. So I went to Subway a lot, and that might seem quite odd to some people, but sometimes you just need a big sandwich, and
Yeah.
that and they ended but that that was there, as
Yeah.
accessible as it would be in the UK. And things like that were, again, they were it's one of those small things that are comforting. But yeah, I was surprised that those would be such a thing, but in a sense that everything's become a bit more global. But the food culture in Malaysia is still very distinctive, and people, I think, prefer, if they can, they prefer the authentic food.
Yeah, well, I'm convinced I want to go to Malaysia now. Do you have any highlights from your experience? Is there a moment that really stands out, whether it's academic or something that you did in your personal life out there? Any travel?
I'd say traveling from state to state was really nice. So I don't drive at the moment, and because I didn't drive, my options with for getting around Malaysia from state to state, what I had to do was get on a coach. And some people might go, oh no, because coaches in the UK don't have the best reputation, but in Malaysia they are super comfy. There is plenty of room for your luggage. The seats are massive. There was plenty of room for your legs, and often you don't even have to sit next to anyone because the seats are just that big. And yeah, it's just a very comfortable way to get from state to state, and they just drop you off at a bus station and you're in a new place. And I used that to go from Johor to Malacca for a few days,
Amazing.
and then near sort of a in around May, June time, I went from Johor to Negeri Sembilan, and from Negeri Sembilan to Kuala Lumpur, where I spent my last 2 weeks. And so, yeah, the coach is a very comfortable way to get around in Malaysia, and it's very convenient. You can buy tickets through an app, and it's much like all travel in Malaysia, it's incredibly affordable. Yeah, so I'd say the sort of excitement of going from place to place and seeing all these beautiful places that are, in some cases, then you can see all the different people that have come by. And it's a real mix of old and new. And, just sort of people watching, really, and observing people living their lives. I love doing that. There's just the very human small things.
Yeah, what amazing sort of eye-opening experience. That sounds absolutely brilliant. How about challenges? Were there any challenges while you were abroad, be it big or small, and how did you overcome them?
My credit line, my debit card got hacked by someone in the UK,
Right.
that meant that I woke up one morning to several pings from my phone saying that someone had attempted to go on a large gambling spree with
Oh
my card details.
no.
Yeah, that did not feel great. But my bank were fortunately amazing, and I said to them, "Look, I'm in Malaysia, and obviously, that's not really where you normally operate. But like, I am in Malaysia, and of course, I have to freeze and cancel my card now. Could you please send me a new card in Malaysia?" And they did. It took a while, but they did send it, and yeah, so that was a bit hairy, and I did have to. People always say you shouldn't do this while abroad, but it was an emergency. I had to use the credit card
Yeah.
for a little bit. But I mean, that was fine because needs must. But yeah, that was a little hairy. But honestly, I was okay. And also, a lot of places in Malaysia don't accept credit or debit cards as payment anyway. So, they mainly take cash or e-wallet. So yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah, I mean, something like that seems like a really big hurdle, which could be the cause of a lot of panic. But I think when
Yeah.
you're in another country, you just have to problem solve and overcome it, and you find a solution, don't you? And
Yeah, I was okay about it because I thought, well, I know I've not done anything wrong. This is just one of those things that happens,
yeah.
and I know how to solve it.
Yes.
So there was that. And another thing was I ended up having to go to the clinic, as they call them, essentially a GP. Because I started experiencing difficulties with my hearing and feeling like there was something in my ears, and I thought, my goodness, because I'd seen these things about people in tropical countries, like they're sleeping and like they get insects crawling in their ears. And I thought, oh no, I've got an insect in my ear, and I thought I could hear it crawling around. I thought, oh gosh, it's gonna die, and then I'm gonna get all this gunk in my ear, and it might make me. It might deafen me. So I thought, right, okay, I have health insurance. I'm just going to sort this out. So I got an appointment. I went into the local clinic. I didn't even need an appointment. That's another thing. The healthcare is so amazing. You don't even need an appointment. So I went into this clinic, and I felt incredibly silly because he quickly told me that it wasn't an insect. It was earwax. It was impacted earwax. Because, again, no one told me this. It turns out that if you're in a humid country, you need to clean out your earwax more often than you do when you live somewhere like here. And no one told me this. So for months, my earwax had been building up to a point where it was starting to affect my hearing because I'd not cleaned it because, well, why would I? So
It's a very good tip. Well, I'll
that's a
make sure
pro
we share
tip.
that.
Clear out your earwax because I didn't, and I had to do two bottles of eardrops over a couple of months or
Lovely.
so.
Very glamorous.
Well, yes, I mean, they said that if that didn't work, I was going to have to go in and sort of have some sort of acid poured in my ear and have it all sort of melted out. And I thought, that sounds a little unpleasant. I'm going to see how the eardrops go. But yeah, so that's a pro tip. And again, that, as you said, that's a problem-solving thing. You are presented with an issue, and at first you kind of go, oh no, what is this? But you have just got to push through and just do, you just have to get through. And once you're on the other side of it, you can look back on it and feel great because you know that less people might have completely freaked out.
Yeah, and you've sort of proved to yourself how resilient you are as a person. And I think when
Yes.
you come back to the UK, navigating things in the UK seems much simpler because you've already done something complicated in a foreign country. So that problem solving and those challenges are all a part of it, I think. Do you feel the study abroad experience has changed you or your outlook?
Yes. I have much broader horizons. I'd say, I mean, I always liked to think I appreciated the diversity of the world, but now I've seen it with my own eyes. And so I think I'm, this is going to sound so, so very gap year, but I do feel like a global citizen. It's I feel connected to a second country, a country that I've lived in and that I have called home, and I feel some sort of kinship with it, and that's really special. I mean, maybe people who are from mixed heritage or something feel similarly, but yeah, I didn't have that up until now. Yeah, so it's really broadened my horizons. I've developed appreciation for, I guess, things people go through in different contexts, because life is hard for a lot of people here, but so we can think, oh, hardship looks like this. And whereas in another country, it might be a similar problem, but it might look quite different. And yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I took anything for granted beforehand, but it definitely gave me a perspective I hadn't previously had. And also, I have a boatload of experiences. I know what it is to live in another country, and that's something that a lot of people cannot say, and it's been greatly valuable. And yeah, I've definitely become more confident since I was there.
Brilliant. And how about sort of professional development? How has studying abroad contributed to a professional development? Have you used any of those transferable skills?
Well, it gave me a lot of space, literally, because I'm 10,000 miles away from where I grew up. It gave me a lot of space to really take stock and go, okay, well, what is it that I enjoy? Like, really deeply, what is it that I get joy from? And what do I want to do? The whole navigating and problem-solving thing, I think, definitely has helped me professionally. And I was able to sort of use the different things and the different environments that I was in to just sort of test out, okay, do I like this? Do I like this? What sort of, how does this feel to me? And it was what do I feel? How do I feel about studying? How do I feel about working? I'd say that's been my professional development, and my employer loves that I've spent time in Malaysia.
Good.
Both of them. They are incredibly supportive and incredibly appreciative, and I'm very much willing to be their woman in Malaysia if it so comes to it.
Brilliant. So we've reached the final question for the podcast today. Would you recommend study abroad to others and why?
Absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. If you're like me, neurodivergent, if you are from a family where your parents didn't get those experiences. Maybe they didn't go to university. Absolutely, yes. In fact, I'd say if you're from such backgrounds, that it's possibly even more important because you're not necessarily going to be as self-confident as someone who is not from such background. And study abroad gives you a lot of confidence. That's what I'd say. And you're going to make amazing memories and have amazing experiences, and who knows what it'll lead you to, you know? I mean, I'm already, looking ahead. There's a lot more opportunities open to me now, thanks to study abroad. Whereas I don't think I would have that broad perspective if I just stayed in the UK, if I'd taken arguably the easier path and just gone, no, I'm just going to stay here, going to do my 3 years, then I'm going to, I don't know, go somewhere. By doing sort of the road less travelled, as someone put it, I think the rewards have been massive.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. That brings us to the end of this episode today. I want to thank you, Bonnie, for speaking with us, the Study Abroad Office today. It was really great to hear about your study abroad experience. If you have any questions or would like to hear more about studying at the University of Reading, Malaysia, or other study abroad opportunities, do not hesitate to get in touch via studyabroad@reading.ac.uk. We also recommend visiting our website, which is a really brilliant resource for study abroad and our opportunities. Thank you very much.